that we are halfway through, so far as the number of lessons are concerned. If you have not invited your friends and family members and neighbors, I hope you will take advantage of these next few hours to do that. As I mentioned today, it certainly is great to be here and to be associated with all of you. Several of my former students are in the audience, including, of course, Rebecca and Mike. In my judgment, you are extremely fortunate to have Mike and Rebecca with you. Mike is an outstanding student. He was good in college. He is dedicated to being an outstanding preacher. In my judgment, he will be. You're very fortunate that he is here. Abortion is probably one of the three most controversial topics that have ever confronted the American people. The other two are slavery and the Vietnam War. Since I did not live in the time of slavery, all I have been able to do is read on what happened in our country. I know about the Vietnam War. I know that our nation was sorely divided. Now, whichever side you happen to think was right, it still was controversial and very disturbing and was not a stabilizing influence on our society. Abortion is highly controversial. It is a very emotional issue. There have been some very unwise and unchristian attitudes and behaviors on both sides of the abortion controversy. Those who favor abortion have used virtually every trick and every deceit that you can mention to justify abortion. Let me give you just one example. According to many who support abortion, if we did not have legalized abortion, thousands and thousands of women would die each year from what they call back alley butchers. This is a false position. Now, if one woman dies, that is one too many. But those who have supported abortion say that at least 10,000 women were dying of illegal abortions before abortion became legal on demand in 1973. That simply is false. The numbers are more nearly 100. In fact, one authority has said 37 to 40. These figures have been inflated in order to encourage our legislators and medical people and others to support legalization of abortion on demand. But the bad attitudes and the wrong behaviors have not all been on the side of abortion. Down in the state of Alabama, a Roman Catholic priest went into an abortion clinic, took a bucket of red paint, and painted the walls of this clinic. There have also been bombings and even killings, and this is not right. I think most of us would be just as strongly opposed to that kind of behavior as we are to abortion. Abortion on demand became legal in 1973 when the United States Supreme Court in Doe versus Wade and in Roe versus the state of Georgia said that a woman can have an abortion anytime during the 9 months of her pregnancy. Now, maybe you're not thinking that that's exactly what the Supreme Court said, but it really is. The first 3 months, the first trimester, is decided only by the woman and her doctor, not anybody else, not her husband, not her father, not anybody can interfere with a woman's abortion during the first 3 months or the first trimester of her pregnancy. In the second trimester, that is month 4, 5, and 6, the state can regulate where the abortion is done and who does it. But the state cannot interfere to the point of preventing her from having an abortion. In the last trimester, a woman can be regulated to the point that she can have an abortion only for physical indications or for psychological or emotional or mental reasons. Now, if you listen carefully to that kind of language, that means that a woman can have an abortion any time between the day of conception and the day preceding the birth of her child. There would be some interference, but nobody can stop her from having an abortion. She can actually have it the day preceding that day when that child would be born. Now, obviously, that kind of abortion, that near to birth, would have to be a sterotomy, which means a cesarean section, except for the purpose of not keeping the baby. Many of these babies are born alive because it's only days or at most months before they would be born normally. So what should a doctor and nurses and other people do with a baby that is born but is not wanted? In other words, a baby that is aborted by the process of hysterotomy. And the answer is, those babies are placed in areas where they are allowed to die, or in some cases they're actually choked, or they are smothered by the mother's placenta. I know this is not very pleasant for us to contemplate, but we need to know that it is happening. Some of the most cruel and unusual means of treating these babies are being used throughout the United States of America. In fact, one medical doctor took 12 fetuses alive, severed their heads, placed within the major arteries a tube that would keep these babies alive, and he kept them alive for several days for experimental purposes. When he was accosted on this particular cruelty, then he asked if the baby is nothing but junk, which is the kind of language being used, then who can condemn my use of these fetuses for experimental purposes? Now, while that may sound cruel, that is a good question. If that baby is junk, or let me use a little different language, if that baby is a disease, or a parasite, then why cannot be used in experiments for improving conditions of human beings? And I do not use those words lightly, because babies are being called parasites. Those babies that are conceived and are not wanted. Dr. Joseph Fletcher, whom I mentioned today, says that a baby who is not wanted is a disease. In fact, he went a step further. He said that baby is a venereal disease. The kind of language that these people are using ought to be revealing. It ought to show the direction in which the American people are heading. Here in the city of St. Louis, there is a prominent historian who teaches at Washington University, Dr. William Brennan. Dr. Brennan has written a book he calls The Abortion Holocaust. The next time you're at your favorite bookstore, I recommend that you buy Dr. Brennan's book and read it. I would read it after I had slept, however, rather than before. You might have nightmares. The book indicates that what we are doing in the United States is exactly what Nazi Germany did immediately preceding and during World War II. In fact, Dr. Brennan has done extensive research to show that the same kind of language that was used in justifying the killing of Jews and Catholics and communists and homosexuals is the language we are using in the United States to kill little babies. It's a very disturbing book. I have on the front seat tonight a book that I am in the process of reading called The Nazi Doctors. And while it's very disturbing, yet as I read it, I am reminded of some of the cruelty that I see perpetrated in abortion and in euthanasia in the United States of America. I want you to think of the enormity of the problem that we face in our great country. Since 1973, 1,500,000 babies have been aborted on the average every year. 1,500,000 babies. Understand that Greater St. Louis has a population of about 3 million. That means that we are aborting every 2 years the entire population of Greater St. Louis, Missouri. If that does not disturb you, in my opinion, you are not very easy to disturb. That's 20 million people that we have killed since 1973, or approximately that. And that really is only a drop in the bucket compared to what is happening worldwide. We are aborting in the United States and in other nations about between 50 and 75 million babies every year. What I want to do tonight is really very simple. I believe it will be easy for you to remember. I want to present basically one argument. I want you to listen carefully, and then as you talk to your neighbors and friends about abortion and its great evil, this, I think, will be easy for you to use. Whatever argument can be used for abortion, and I will give you several as time allows, can also be used for infanticide and euthanasia. Let me repeat that. Whatever argument, or an argument almost always, can be used to sustain abortion, can also be used to justify infanticide and euthanasia. Now maybe these two words, infanticide and euthanasia, are not ones that you use on a regular basis. So let me specify and define and outline. The word infanticide simply refers to the killing of little babies once they have exited the mother's body. We call it abortion, or as Dr. Joseph Fletcher calls, he calls it fetal euthanasia, which is a very revealing expression. Abortion is fetal euthanasia. That's killing babies, because we have determined that they are not worthy to live for whatever reasons we make that determination. Infanticide has been almost universally practiced since the beginning of history. You will go back and study the Babylonians, the Medo-Persians, and then later the Greeks and the Romans. You will find infanticide almost universally practiced. In Greece, babies were considered to be a great burden unless they were needed. The same was true in ancient Rome. The Romans needed soldiers. So when a baby that was handicapped was born, or in some cases when a baby girl was born, they simply were not wanted. They were taken out to a mountainside or to a cave or to other places where they were exposed to the elements or devoured by wild beasts. Or, what is even worse, many of these little girl babies were picked up by men who ran houses of prostitution, and they were kept till they were 8 or 10 or 12 years old and turned into prostitutes. But that could never happen in the United States. Little babies being killed after they are born, not aborted, after they are born, that could never happen in the United States, could it? Not many months ago, a father who happened to be a veterinarian in the state of Illinois at the little town of Hardy went into the hospital to see his newborn baby. The baby happened to be a little boy. The child had severe problems, among these cleft palate. This doctor picked that son from that crib and beat his brains out on the nursery floor. The police arrested the doctor, and they brought him to trial. But the judge did not allow conviction because he said, we have no law forbidding that. I was not aware that the state of Illinois did not have a law that condemned murder. I thought every state did. But the father was allowed to kill his own son and to go free because apparently a father in modern America has the right to take the life of his own baby when he decides that that baby no longer can have quality life. Do you see why I say that if you make an argument for abortion, that the same applies to infanticide and euthanasia? Several years ago, a little boy was born in the city of Bloomington, Indiana. I've held meetings in Bloomington. I've visited Bloomington several times. It's kind of the heart of America. These are not cruel people, usually. In fact, I have a number of good friends who live in Bloomington, faithful members of the church. But this little boy was born to a school teacher and his wife. The child suffered from a problem called esophageal atresia. And that means that at the end of the esophagus, there was a sac-like fixture that would not allow the food to go into the child's stomach. The danger was that the food would exit either side of the esophagus, get into the lungs, and the child would die from pneumonia. The doctor said, this is a serious problem, but not one we're unaccustomed to. We can repair the damage and probably 95% safe. And that's pretty high. We mentioned today the need for doctors to give informed consent, and that's exactly what this doctor said. He said, we can operate, and the child almost certainly will be well. But the parents said, no, there will be no surgery. The reason was, this little boy not only had that problem, that physical problem, but he was Down syndrome. The father had been reading on Down syndrome, commonly called mongolism, and had decided that a child who suffered from Down syndrome could not have quality life. I like what George Will says, and incidentally, George Will has a Down syndrome child. He said, my son doesn't suffer from anything. He is Down syndrome, but he's not suffering. But this father said, there will be no surgery. The doctor became upset and angry. He called the local district attorney, had him to come to the hospital. He advised him of what was going on. And the district attorney called the judge. And he said, a little boy is being allowed to starve. And we want you to come to the hospital. The judge went to the Bloomington Hospital. They had a court trial or a hearing in one of the rooms at the hospital. And the judge said, these parents have a right to let this child die if they so choose. It was then that this incident hit the newspapers and radio and television and covered the entire United States. There were a number of parents who called the Bloomington Hospital and the family involved and said, we'll take that little boy. We'll have the surgery done and we'll rear that child as our own. And the parents said no. As George Will said in his excellent article on Down syndrome, those parents wanted that child dead. Not because he'd done any wrong, but because he was Down syndrome. The district attorney left Bloomington, Indiana, started to Washington, he flew down to Atlanta, and was on his way to Washington to confront the United States Attorney General and even probably the President. They called him in Atlanta and said, you can come on back because this little boy has died. This is a human being that was starved to death. Starved to death. If they were going to put this little child to death, why not do it mercifully? They starved him. Do you know what starving is? I have sometimes said when Molly was 5 minutes late for dinner, I'm starving to death. That was not true. I was just barely hungry compared to what we're talking about. Here is a little boy that for the last 2 days of his existence could not cry. because he had no spittle that would allow him to cry. The last few hours of his life, the blood oozed from his little mouth, and he died a horrible death. We're not talking about Nazi Germany. We're not talking about Rome and Greece and Babylon. We're talking about what is supposed to be a Christian nation, the United States of America. Would you treat an animal like that? Would you treat your dog like that? I mentioned this morning that I have a little dog that probably is as worthless as any that ever existed. He's half poodle and half Yorkshire, and all rotten. At the age of 58, I had my first dog. And I am so attached to that little fellow that I'm almost embarrassed to mention it. My wife has severe hearing loss. She has had surgery on both, well, on her left ear, but has otospongiosis, which is a softening of the inner ear. And she told me, when you're on in meetings or on lectureships, I cannot hear if somebody knocks at the door or if we have a storm. I just cannot hear. So we need to get a dog. I'm very attached to that woman, too. So I said, all right, if that's your will in the matter, then all right. So one day when I was sitting at my typewriter, she brought a little bundle, a little solid black, down and said, here's the one I want. And I said, all right, if you want it, now he's yours. He's not mine. He's yours. She said, now he's going to stay in the basement during the time we eat, and he's going to sleep in the basement. Would you like to guess where he eats? We have a placemat right in our chair, and that's where he eats every meal. And he sleeps where he chooses. I can imagine his getting heartworms, though I try to prevent it, or maybe being run over and severely crippled. And I can imagine having to take him to the doctor and have him put to sleep. I never thought I'd say this, but I would hurt tremendously. But I would do it. I would not starve that little dog. I wouldn't starve a chicken. I wouldn't starve a cow. And yet there are hundreds of babies being starved in the United States every year. If they use morphine and kill them instantly, they are afraid of being accused of murder. But they can starve them to death. We were having a vacation Bible school at Scotts Hill, where I preach. The vacation Bible school was over, and Molly and I had started back to Henderson. As we drove out of Scotts Hill, we went over a little hill in the road, and there was a road full of ambulances and automobiles and people. And horses. Scotts Hill is well known for its fine horses. A young man and his girlfriend had started to Jackson for a Saturday evening date, or Friday evening, I believe. And as he went over the hill, there were 35 to 40 fine horses in the road. He was doing, he said 45. I think he had problems convincing anybody because he killed 9 of them. When I walked up, I saw horses all over the road and in the ditch. One little sorrel mare was lying where I could have touched her. She had had all 4 legs broken. She was dead. One was lying out under a tree, and she had all 4 legs broken. They called a veterinarian from Parsons, Tennessee. He brought over his .357 Magnum and killed 4 or 5 of these horses that had been severely damaged but not killed immediately. I would not want to do that, but I approve of his doing it. I think it is merciful to put a horse or a dog or a cow to death who is suffering. It is not right to let them suffer. Now, if we are going to treat babies like I have just mentioned, why not do it mercifully? Why not kill them instead of letting them starve to death? I mentioned this morning 2 medical doctors who teach at Yale University School of Medicine and who practice at Yale New Haven Hospital. These men have allowed to die 43 babies, and that's 15% of all the babies that died during the period about which they talk. 43 babies. And they said in an article in, I believe, Time magazine, that these children could never have quality life. I believe the title of the article was, Which Baby Shall Live? And they said many of these babies are nothing more than human vegetables. A young woman read that article, and she wrote a reply. It is in a book called The Zero People. The author is Sandra Diamond. And these are her words, maybe not exact, but this is the burden of them. She said, my name is Sandra Diamond, and by your definition, I am a vegetable. Because I was born with cerebral palsy. When I was born, my parents said the best thing to do is to put her in a home and forget her. She said my parents were not willing to do that. The doctor said she will never walk and she'll never talk. She'll never be able to go to the bathroom. The best thing to do is to put her away and forget her. The parents had surgery after surgery. And this young woman said, today I cannot walk, and I cannot go to the bathroom, but I make my living as a clinical psychologist. And I believe I am more human than either Dr. Duff or Dr. Campbell. If you have never been involved with a child who is afflicted in certain, in some of these ways, it's very disturbing. I'm not going to tell you it is not. When I was in Georgia in the sporting goods business at Dalton, I received a call from a young woman who had worked for me several years before, whom I had not seen in a number of years. When she called, she was crying, and she said, Brother Claiborne, will you please come to the hospital? And I dropped whatever I was doing and rushed to our hospital in Dalton. When I arrived, she met me at the door, and she said, Brother Claiborne, they're trying to take my baby from me. And I said, who's trying to take your baby? And she said, the doctors and the hospital people. And my question, why would they try to take your baby? Who gave them authority to take your baby? And she said, my little boy is Down syndrome. And I want you to tell me what I ought to do. The doctor said he will never walk. He will never live beyond two. He will never talk. He will be susceptible to every disease that comes along. He can never lead, and they may not have used this term, but what they meant, he cannot have quality life. And she said, what do you think I ought to do? I knew it did not make any difference what I thought, or what those doctors thought, or what anybody else thought. I knew Joyce was going to take that little boy home with her. I knew that, and that's exactly what she did. I'd not seen her for 6 years. When the church at Calhoun, Georgia called and wanted me to do a gospel meeting. I remember that Sunday morning that I started. When I walked in the building at Calhoun, Georgia, which is about 60 miles north of Atlanta, I noticed a little boy up front start walking down the aisle. And as he drew near, I knew who he was. He walked up and held out his hand and said, Brother Claiborne, I'm glad to meet you. You see, the doctor said he'd never live, but he did. They said he'd never talk or walk, but he did. Today, he's about 20 years old. We have several youngsters at Fried Hardeman from Calhoun. They all know him and love him, and they say he's doing beautifully. I do not wish to be critical of doctors, as I said this morning. But Dr. Paul Meyer, who is a psychiatrist in Dallas, Texas, says that MD behind a doctor's name does not mean medical deity. They do not always know. And even if they did know, how can we justify being cruel and inhuman to somebody who's suffering? The very essence of humanity, proving that we are human beings, is our concern for those who are in need, the sick, the troubled, the distressed. That's what Christianity is all about. Can you imagine our Lord Jesus Christ going to the man who is suffering from leprosy and saying to him, you have no right to live anyway. You couldn't have quality life. People won't even talk to you. But our Lord Jesus Christ went to the man and touched him. You know, I read that for years without realizing what that meant. The Lord touched a leper. A leper. I doubt if he'd been touched for years, not by family, not by friends, not by anybody. But the Lord Jesus Christ touched him and made him whole. Christianity says that you love your neighbor, and it does not describe who your neighbor is. It doesn't say if he's sick, or if he's Down syndrome, or if he's spina bifida, that you do not love people like this. You let them die. That's not what New Testament Christianity is about. Now, the same can be said with respect to euthanasia. Euthanasia simply means good death. The word comes from the Greek word eu, meaning good, or well, depending on the context, and thanatos, meaning death. As the Greeks originally used that term, they had in mind a man who had lived a good, useful life, and then died with his family and his friends, and went on to meet his maker. It was a good term, but that is not the way the term is used in 1988. We mean mercy killing. Killing old people, or for that matter, distressed people. And I hate to use this word over, but the expression they're using, somebody who doesn't have quality life, can you tell me what quality life is? Up until August, 2 years ago, I had gone for 6 years to visit with a lady in the nursing home in Lexington, Tennessee, which is the county where I preach. She had gone into the nursing home at 102 and died at 108. A remarkable lady. I loved her dearly. I don't know what purpose she served. She could not walk. In the last 2 or 3 years, she could not even sit in a chair. She was bedfast. I know one man she helped. I believe I have a better understanding now of old people and of people who are not productive because I knew and loved Grandma God. I go to nursing homes wherever I'm in meetings and regularly at the congregation where I preach. I go to see people who do not know who they are. They do not even know that they are. Or at least if they do, they give no indication of it. What are we going to do with these old people who are permanently comatose or senile? I know how much they cost. I know Grandma Goff cost her family about $20,000 a year for about 8 years. That's a lot of money. Think of all the good we could do in helping people that are in need, in educating, if we just cut off all these old people. Oh, we wouldn't do that, would we? Are you aware that the state of Florida several years ago passed a bill that would allow the state to let these people die? The bill was introduced by a medical doctor who also served as a legislator in the state of Florida. The good Florida people had enough sense to know that this is not what ought to be done. In 2 years, the bill was destroyed. But can you imagine the cruelty and the heartlessness that would allow that to happen? Several years ago, when we started talking so much about abortion and infanticide, many people were saying this is a slippery slide or a slippery slope, or sometimes they call it the domino argument. And that means that once you start in a certain direction, if you're not careful, then you'll end up in a much worse condition. In other words, if we start with abortion, then we'll have infanticide and then we'll have euthanasia. And those who supported abortion said, oh, that could never happen. Not in the United States. It is happening. And one of the best examples I can give you is of Nazi Germany. And I wish you'd buy books like the Nazi doctors or the Abortion Holocaust by Dr. Brennan and find out what happened in Germany and the direction that we're heading in the United States of America. Let me give you just a brief history, and then I want to summarize it by giving you an argument or two. When Hitler became Chancellor of Germany, He had determined by his reading from Nietzsche, the famous philosopher, and Wagner, the famous musician, that certain lives simply were not worth living. That's the kind of language they use. In fact, I mentioned today that he said certain people were useless eaters. They're consuming food and other supplies that are short and that we need for the war effort. So he gave the power to Dr. Brandt and Dr. Philip Buller and others to begin a euthanasia program. And making it very brief, 275,000 German people, not Poles, not Czechs, German old people and young people were put to death. In fact, Dr. Frederick Wortham, who is an American psychiatrist, but also a German, at least a German in background, wrote a little book he called The Euthanasia Program. And he says in one case, a child was put to death because he had badly modeled ears. Now, do you know what that means? I expect if I looked over this audience, and I don't know what badly modeled ears are, that I could find some. Might even start up here and find some. One child was killed because he had six digits on his hand rather than five. And old people were in nursing homes and hospitals, and they were told by those who came to investigate that we're going to take you to a nice, warm place where you can spend the rest of your days in comfort and peace. They took those old people from those hospitals and from those nursing homes, and they drove as straight as an arrow to the ovens and the gas chambers, and all 275,000 were killed. And their remains strolled over the farms in Belhausen and Auschwitz. Could that happen here? I mentioned today that the German people had not, I didn't mention this, but I said we need to study it and we need to know what's going on. The German people should have known. Why didn't they stop it? Why didn't the preacher speak out against it? The Catholic Church came very close to making an alliance with Hitler. They did with Mussolini. The Catholic bishops and priests had to know. They could not have been ignorant. The same is true of the Lutheran Church. In fact, after the war, one of the Lutheran preachers, a man by the name of Martin Lee Miller, excused or at least apologized for what he had done by saying, and I want you to listen to this carefully. Martin Lee Miller said, when the Nazis came for the Catholics, in other words, to put them to death, I didn't speak out because I was Protestant. When they came for the communists, I did not speak out because I was not a communist. When they came for the trade unionists, I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. And when they came for me, there was nobody to speak out. What I'm asking you to do, and will throughout the week, is to be informed and then speak out. Maybe it's just to your next door neighbor, or to your friend, or to your family member. But if each one of us would speak to somebody and show them what's going on, we can change it. And we have an obligation to do it. And besides, I like the words of the great book of Esther. Who knows whether or not you are coming to the kingdom for such a time as this? Maybe this is the reason God raised you up. Now, there are a great number of arguments that are supposed to justify abortion. We've run out of time, so let me give you one. The matter of cost. Little babies that are born spina bifida, and I think most of you know what that is. It's an opening in the spine that has to be closed or the child will die from spinal meningitis. It has not been many years since nothing could be done, but I know a number of spina bifida people. Or if a child is born with some other deformity, he's going to cost a great amount of money. Many parents simply cannot take that on. But I can assure you that I know what it is. And if we can justify abortion because that child will be born Down syndrome or Huntington chorea, we can justify it for children that are decrepit or deformed. had a baby sister who was 3 years, 6 years younger than I. At the age of 3, she contracted polio. She died at the age of 20. I do not remember the first day. I shall never forget the second. She was one of the most remarkable people I ever met in my life. From age 3 until she was 20, she cost my parents thousands and thousands of dollars. On one occasion, she spent 13 months in Vanderbilt Hospital in Nashville, Tennessee. And for a parent, a set of parents who already have 11, this was the 12th one. Then you know how burdensome that was. I remember going to visit her when I was a student at Freed Hardeman. I would get on the bus at Henderson and ride to Nashville and then go out to Vanderbilt Hospital. They've taken and borne holes in her head, like you would bore in a piece of wood. And then they put what looked like ice tongs in her head, and down behind the bed were 15 pounds of weight. They were trying to straighten her little curved back. She was so delicate and so frail. For 13 months, she lay flat on her back. She wrote letters. She crocheted. She did all kind of needlework. And I do not remember hearing her complain. Not once. She was a senior in high school the year she died. The school was so moved. It's her first year in school, incidentally. She was valedictorian of her class. The boys would make a saddle of their hands and allow her to sit on it. And they would carry her up the steps and down the steps. And I remember watching those boys, football players, big strapping guys, cry at her funeral. I do not know how much she cost my parents. I remember when my mom would stay up one night all night taking care of her, and my dad would stay up the next night. And they did this for months and months with 11 more to take care of. Why would it not have been useful to have allowed her to die? They would have had more money for the rest of us. Did she have quality life? She had learned to walk 3 times. I know 11 other people, her brothers and sisters, who think their lives would be immensely poor had we not known this sister. When we start talking about money, are we contrasting and comparing money to life? We're facing some very serious problems, I hope you know. You probably will forget much of what I've said. So again, I am urging you to buy and read and speak out. Silence can be sinful. I will harp on that throughout this week because I believe that with all of my heart. We have to know, and then we have to say what we know. God will hold us accountable. There is no way, greater way to approach this problem or others we shall discuss and ones we have discussed than by your good Christian influence. But to have a Christian influence, you have to be a Christian. If not, you're not a child of the living God. We urge you to confess your faith before God and before this good audience. To turn away from sin and to be baptized to have your sins remitted. When you do that, God will add you to his church and you're on your way to heaven. And then he expects you to let your light so shine that men may see your good work and turn and glorify your Father which is in heaven. If you're an unfaithful and indifferent Christian and you need to make that right with God tonight, if you need to make it public, now is the time. Whatever you need, God will supply it if you'll come right now as we stand together and sing. Will you come?